following program is intended for mature audiences.
Savino Veritas, live from Burbank, California.
Good evening, everyone. Tom Savino here from Burbank, California, with Savino Veritas in Wine the Truth. The fine wine of select gripes. Tonight, the gripe. The good, the bad, the dirty. Steve Spacek, a federal, state, and local government performance expert, author of American State Litter Scorecard, joins us about America's dirtiest cities and states.
I want to know about this.
Say lights, camera, action, and I'll start.
Tonight we're honored to welcome back Steve Spacek, who was with us in 2015. Steve Spacek is a federal, state, and local government performance expert. He's an author, the author of American State Litter Scorecard, and he has the website litterscorecard.com, litterscorecard.com. He's cited in the Boston Globe. He's interviewed for Travel and Leisure's America's Dirtiest Cities.
I was hoping you'd give me a bath. I'm very, very dirty.
And other publications. He's moderated and presented at public service conferences across the United States of America. Steve joins us from Washington, D.C. area in Maryland, near Washington, D.C., and he is a native of Houston, Texas. And I thank you for being with us, and I'll just say...
Lights, cameras, action!
Thank you for having me. The scorecard comes out every 4 years. This is a ready list that I prepared. There was supposed to be a new scorecard coming out in the last 12 months. I've held off. But I did have a list from 20 states. I had to decide from 20 states which would be 10 biggest and dirtiest. So I created this list strictly for Earth Day. And before I even go about that, we were talking about Earth Day, why we celebrate it, being on a tangent. But the purpose is to reflect on environmental protection and preservation. The late U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson of Wisconsin, and I went to grad school there for a time back in the 80s. He was a champion, an academic champion of environmental rights in the very late 1960s. And he felt that if he could infuse an emerging public consciousness about air and water pollution, it would put environmental protection and preservation out onto the national stage.
Well, I want to know about this.
So on April 22nd, Wednesday, April 22nd of 1970, to be exact, he led a teach-in at the University of Michigan, the Ann Arbor campus. And on the same day, thousands of other colleges and their students took part in this teach-in, and they organized protests. And again, this is the time when Nixon was president. There's a lot of anti-war sentiment. And environmental protection kind of went hand in hand with environmental sentiment. There, people didn't trust government. They didn't trust people going to war in another country and dying in another country. And then they were not trusting government to do something about pollution that was killing off people and animals here in the United States. It led a movement to later that year, Richard Milhouse Nixon signed an executive order on December 2nd, 1970, to create the U.S. EPA. And then just a few days later, on December 31st, he signed a congressional passed Clean Air Act. And then under 2 years later, on October 18th of 72, the Clean Water Act was passed. And then finally, again, it's very important because the 50th anniversary of Earth Day will be coming up in 2 years. And EarthDayNetwork.org just sent me a big email to let everybody know, all your listeners know, get ready for 2020, April 22nd, 2020, the 5th. That's going to be a big day. They're asking just zillions of people to really show up take pride in the earth. Do behaviors that protect and preserve the earth. Do not mess with the earth. Do not pollute it. Don't kill off Mother Earth.
Oh, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature.
So that's the reason why it's important to celebrate Earth Day.
That's interesting, Steve. For those of us with a 2020 vision who are looking to see our way clear of the current morass we're in, looking to rid ourselves of a fascist state in 2020, we have other things to look forward to. The 50th anniversary of Earth Day. Thank you for letting us know about that. Let me ask you, Steve, what are the 10 dirtiest waste-littered states in the United States? What are those states?
I mentioned I had a list of 20 states that were in contention, and I had six or seven already. They stood out because it wasn't just their conditions. It was the kind of people that lived there. They had a lot of violations. I was getting emails about these states from people, and I tried to do some further research. And also, some of these states had high death rates from collisions with litter, either on local or city streets or highways. Most of these deaths occur, strangely enough, on interstate highways, but you get over 800 people being killed in the United States each year because of this.
That's a very striking statistic, Steve.
When you're slapped, you'll take it and like it.
I think most of us don't think of environmental hazards as being something that could kill you from an auto accident. So this is obstruction by litter on our roadways.
You know, it's kind of interesting. We'll be talking maybe about Scott Pruitt, but the same things came up. And yes, people think more about air and water pollution, but land pollution, things that are toxic to the land, they also kill people too. And so I had, again, six to seven states that stood out. And then I had about 13 other states to look at. And by the way, I did mention 800 people killed each year. And, you know, we did our last interview in 2015. And at that time, prior to 2015, some of these deaths were starting to go down in some states. But since our interview, these deaths have actually been increasing. And in some states, they've just really increased. And for example, my home state, we mentioned 10 states. Texas now outdoes any state for litter and debris crash deaths. Almost 120 people were killed just 2 years ago for a 12-month period. More than any other state. So more than one-eighth of all the deaths in the United States just come strictly out of Texas. Another jurisdiction, though it's not on the dirty list, would be California. And I don't think Californians are litterers compared to some of these other states, but I think most of those are due to more natural disasters, not man-made littering. But I mentioned Texas as one of these big littered states. And the other states starting in population size, was Pennsylvania, Commonwealth of PA, Commonwealth of New Jersey.
They disrespected the Bing.
The state of Michigan, which has been in the news for Flint. And then other states included Louisiana, Oklahoma, Georgia, South Carolina, Kansas, strangely enough, which is one of the second or smallest state on this list, but they've had tremendous litter, deaths, and pollution in the last 3 years, just a tremendous rise. And then finally, the state of Nevada next door to California. Those comprise the 10 states.
I'm assuming that the litter that's thrown on the freeways and roadways is causing hazardous obstructions, and that's what's causing these auto deaths. Is that right?
Brilliant!
Well, here's the thing. Some people, I can't blame it all on all people, but one thing is that public litter tends to occur near transportation routes. So these could be walking routes, swimming routes, driving routes. Just there's a mode of transportation. And then that's where a lot of the litter tends to occur. And then the most deadly litter tends to occur along transportation use routes utilized by motor vehicles. And that would be individual cars, trucks, etc.
That reminds me, Steve, of something I've learned recently. I wish I had learned decades ago. I am a smoker many decades ago. I gave it up over 30 years ago, over 40 years ago. I can't even keep track of when I gave it up. Nevertheless, I smoked and thought nothing of disposing my cigarette onto the ground and snuffing it out, as millions of people like me did and still do. Now, I understand recently, I just learned that these cigarette butts, or filters maybe, are very toxic to the land. Could you talk about that a little?
Yes. In fact, I'm glad you brought it up, because cigarette filters are, since we're on your show, we'll be a little more graphic. Cigarette butts.
Directly in the buttocks.
They're the number one source of litter objects, not just in the United States, but worldwide. And these filters or butts can, animals will think, birds, animals, they'll think it's food. They've been found in the stomachs of birds, animals, fish for consumption. I wouldn't say I'm the biggest eater of human food, living things, but that even when you sell these items at a store for public consumption, they've been actually found. So I'm just saying that that's what has happened. And then the other sources of litter that causes these deaths or injuries would include paper litter. It could include plastic cups, or basically a lot of it is fast food related. And then some of it is debris or litter thrown by commercial processes, such as boxes, tire scraps, debris. And some of these are intentionally thrown into the roadway by commercial sources. And then, strangely enough, you'll have individuals that work in business, they have toxic litter where they're not supposed to throw it on public property at all. It's supposed to be handled under certain federal regulations, but they choose to dump it on public properties or streets or roadways. And then a human being or an animal will stop by and step on it, or it gets in their system, and then they get sick or die from it. So there have been deaths from this. For example, New York State, and probably even California, they usually force you to move these toxins to other states. So you have states like Nevada, which I mentioned, that's a wide open toxic dump state. And you have states like New Jersey and Virginia, maybe PA. They have become, we can throw in South Carolina. For the West and East Coast, these are states where a lot of toxins are dumped from certain states where they've been banned. And so just businesses, or they'll find a way to transport these dangerous, deadly waste across state lines to a state where they'll kind of look the other way, or they're not as illicit in the processing. So those are states that receive these wastes. Again, Nevada, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Georgia. And then there's states in the middle part of the United States where they really have no regulations whatsoever, such as Texas and Louisiana, maybe Oklahoma. Those are very toxic states where federal regulations are pretty much ignored as much as possible. And also some of this came out during the Scott Pruitt thing. I know you may be asking me a question about that.
Steve, this brings up a very strange story that I heard last week. Maybe you could confirm it or debunk it or something. But I heard that New York is sending its shit to Alabama. It's going to load trains of shit from New York to Alabama. Is this true?
If I may be so blunt, who gives a shit?
Yes, it's true. And it's either happening right now or about to happen, but yes, that is happening.
So train loads of New York shit is going to head down south to Alabama. I'm guessing they're going to be compensated in some way for this, yes, Steve?
I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. You would think so. I just want to say some of these states, and they tend to be in flyover USA or certain coastal or certain intermountain west states. That's where they are. They just look the other way. I would think there's a monetary benefit by doing this, but these states keep forgetting that people, their citizens obviously must be expendable, that getting the money in the hand is more important than saving a person's life. And so that's just how I see it, and a lot of people out there see it.
That is definitely how I see it, and I've always seen it that way, and I am appalled at what's been going on the last 400 and something days in what used to be the Environmental Protection Agency, which now is, I don't even know what it is.
What it is, or what's up?
What's up?
What it is, or what's up?
What's up?
We'll get to that and maybe Scott Pruitt in just a minute, but I just want to say that this is Savino Veritas. You're listening to Steve Spacek from Washington, D.C. area. And another thing, Steve, our talk reminded me of is that scientists are finding, biological scientists are finding that in human beings, there is an increase in a certain kind of plastic element, plastics in our bodies that, of course, are not supposed to be there. But apparently, we're ingesting this from fish that ingest little pieces of plastic from plastic bags that are just totally littering our oceans.
I'm going to have to science the shit out of this.
Huge land spill, or excuse me, I shouldn't say a water area of the Pacific. They say it's several states' big square area miles, and it's loaded with plastic and other pollution from China and Japan. And, you know, it's kind of funny. Trump had a rally.
Shut the fuck up, Donnie.
Saturday. And then at the Scott Pruitt hearings with the House Energy Committee, they were talking about pollution coming from other countries, and we're not regulating it. And probably the biggest violator, hands down, would be China. They're sending their trash and litter. They're just dumping it into the Pacific, and they're going to assume that Americans will be the recipient, a big, giant. So that's what's happening, and there's no controls. And the EPA really can't do anything about it, even though they'd like to. There's no manpower designated. Probably won't be dealt with till it arrives on American shores or at Hawaii or Alaska, but it is certainly a concern.
From what I understand, Steve, the terrible smog in Beijing and China makes its way to the Pacific coast of the United States here in California and Washington and Oregon. We are actually experiencing the effects of smog from China.
Right. And you know, I don't know if I mentioned before, but there are places here in America where we in America, it's not as strong as Beijing, but we're putting out a lot of CO2 out into the atmosphere. And when I was doing research for something, a question you may bring up about EPA hearings, I kind of found out the places in America where they had excessive deadly levels of CO2 as of 3 or 4 years ago. And I was kind of, it opened up my eyes where some of these places are. From a state standpoint, I mentioned New Jersey was one, and I have to regulate all the states, but basically the New Jersey, the PA corridor, the Louisiana-Texas corridor, certain places in Georgia, and New Mexico had a lot of CO2 pollution, especially around Farmington, New Mexico, which is on the four-state line between, of course, New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, and, my God, Colorado. That little community puts out more CO2 than any other small community or period in the United States. So that is a people don't know this. And then from a state standpoint, excuse me, an urban or municipality standpoint, there were some cities listed such as New Orleans and Louisville, Kentucky, and Pittsburgh. And according by population size, we mentioned earlier where I was from in Texas, and Houston supposedly right now, at least back then, was the most CO2 emitting city in the United States for those million plus. You would think it'd be Los Angeles or in California, but no, it's more Texas. And I would say right now, if there's a big state in America that is really putting out pollution with a lot of people and nothing's being done, it would be definitely the Lone Star State. On Utah, at least on land pollution, it's generally not been on the radar. But, and again, when I was doing, I hate to give out a lot of, there might have been a question to be asked about these CO2 hearings, one where I testified at 3 years ago. It did have counties with high CO2 levels, but not as high as some other states. So,
yeah.
Keep in mind, Utah, a lot of these states that are violators, there are two types. You have very conservative red states. Utah is very red. But then we have some blue states with what I call red state Democrats.
Yes.
And one of those states, I would definitely call New Jersey. Even though they vote Democratic, when it comes to pollution prevention, they're much more like Texas or Louisiana. They're just look the other way. That's why I call them red state Democrats.
Yeah. Because
politically, they're blue, but environmental protection-wise, they're very anti-protection-wise. And that's one reason why they're part of my list. And Wallet had even came up with state capitals where pollution problems were existing. And Trenton made the worst list where, for a state capital city, it was probably listed as the most polluted state capital in the United States.
Well, we here in this very blue state of California are very upset, most of us anyway, about our efforts to, our successful efforts over decades to control air pollution and clean the air, and how that's being actually contested in court by the federal government. It's very frustrating. It's anger makes me angry, makes many people angry, especially when we hear from Republicans that states should have their own say in governing their own state. And when we have these regulations here, we call them protections. We legislate these protections, and it's really frustrating and angering to see the federal government try to shoot that down. I don't know if you'd like to comment on that.
That, Tom, it was funny because that was brought up at the Scott Pruitt hearing. They were looking at EPA and his personal behaviors, which it happened, I think it was last Wednesday or Thursday. I've lost, but I took good notes. I was listening in on the hearing, and that came up by two Democrats in California, Tony Cardenas. I've also heard it pronounced Cardenas. But I think it's Tony and
yes.
Anna Eshoo,
yes,
members
I'm
of the House
with him, yeah.
Committee on Energy. But they made the comment about states' rights. What about Californians' right to have cleaner air or cleaner standards than the federal standard? And the federal standards, of course, appear to be weakening. And that argument was made, and you know, it's kind of funny. I don't know if I told you this the last time, but you have some states, for example, since Trump has been elected, the state of New York has been basically having a war with the state of California. Trump is influenced by a lot of politicals in New York State that do not live in New York City. They tend to be Republican. And they're a little more anti-green in their minds than green, and certainly more conservative. And Trump is being influenced by those people.
Be careful, son. I can sue you.
And also they think that the California standards would affect these high urbanized states to the east, such as New York and then also Texas. Texas is basically working with New York State, those two states' politicals, to shut down what Californians want. So I apologize, but this is what's going on. And these people are aiding and abetting the mindset and behaviors of Scott Pruitt and his agency.
Yeah, so thank you for enlightening us on that issue. I didn't know about that. That's very interesting. I have some personal demons that...
I cast you out! Unclean spirit!
Show it up your ass!
In the name of our Lord!
I'm working with right now in terms of my... psychotherapy, which I just restarted after decades of not having, because some family members who live in New York, in fact, they live in New York City, but they live in that very, very red borough of Staten Island, the only borough that is pro-Trump, and seems to have infected my sister.
Oh, that's a shame.
Who is supposed to be an educated person. But anyway, that's interesting that New York and Texas are actually working together against California, something I didn't know.
And I don't know if I should interject this, but, you know, Busy Bee Housekeeping came up with a list back in February of what it considered dirty U.S. cities, but they didn't look at the exterior. You know, I look at public properties or the outside areas. They looked at the internal areas. They looked at residences and apartments and commercial properties, and they made a judgment on where places were dirty, and they used information. They had secretly, when they're maintaining these properties, these homes and apartments and commercial businesses, they were secretly measuring CO2 levels and rat droppings and mouse droppings and cockroach.
Oh, that's so disgusting. Oh, my God, that's the worst thing I ever heard in my life.
Wow.
Particulate matters and CO2 in the air. Yeah, they were doing this really quietly and low-key without their clients knowing this.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So when I first read about Busy Bee, in reference to your subject here that you're speaking to our listeners, our Savino Veritas listeners, you're listening to Steve Spacek. When I first saw that on your information sheet, I said, well, that's kind of real person. I didn't know they were actually looking at CO2 levels and things like that. That's interesting.
Well, they came out with a list of cities. And, you know, I mentioned before, it's still out there. And there was a press release on this topic before the major election back in November. And I hope you'll bring that up because that was a story I wrote that went viral at the time back in September 2016 before the war between Bill Clinton and Trump when it came down to that. Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
Anyway, Busy Bee came out with a list based on those measurements. The number one most dirtiest city, it used to be rated by Travel and Leisure. They had rated years before, and they still contend New York had excessive waste, air, and water pollution. Well, Busy Bee came out with a list of excessive home, apartment, and commercial building pollutants, and it rated New York City the dirtiest. But strangely enough, the number two dirtiest was the city of Los Angeles.
I actually don't think that's that strange, really. Having being raised in New York City, but then living most of my adult life here in Los Angeles, so I know both environments, although I left New York a long time ago, and it could change. But yeah, L.A. can be a very dirty place. We don't have the rat problem that New York does. And now the rats in New York are kind of helping out, I think, because they take the pizzas away and clear out the streets.
It's funny you brought that up because I hope that this is the humorous. I remember David Letterman, he would talk about the size of the rats running around. And people thought they were like pets, like dogs or cats out on the street, that they were that big, and people were domesticating them.
Hey, I'm walking here! I'm walking here! Up yours, you son of a way, bitch! You don't talk me that way! Get out of here!
Yeah, we have
a...
There's a friend of ours here who is an artist, and she, for a long time, worked in a gallery, and periodically the owner of the gallery would put out some danishes and pastry for everybody. And one night he said, "Let's close. You know, I'll put the lid on this pastry. We'll have it in the morning." And in the morning, it was gone. The pastries were gone, and the lid was off. And of course, everybody was blaming others. But it turned out they discovered this huge rat that had been living in the gallery somewhere, and apparently had been periodically feasting on all these delicacies. And yes, so we do have rats here, of course, but they're a different class of rats here. We have rats are a lot more laid back and surfing, beach rats.
California rats.
Yeah, but so that, but that busy bee thing, that is really interesting. Now, I'm assuming, of course, they did that. It sounds like they did that on the sly. They're not naming a person's house, or
you would need three promotions to get to be an asshole
or something like that. No, they just
absolutely. Yeah. This is a general. They also use, when they did this measurements on their own, also they used some complementary data from the EPA. They added that to kind of like strengthen their in-house measuring methodology. They used some EPA data, and they used some Census Bureau data from the American Housing Survey. So they put all this together, made a model, but a lot of the data, the thrust of their measurements at homes and apartments and commercial was the thrust of their measurements. By the way, I want to interject. Riverside, yes. San Bernardino was rated third dirtiest, and then Phoenix to the east of you was sixth dirtiest. For the southern states, for Texas going up to Virginia, the number one dirtiest city was Houston. And then Chicago came out fourth dirtiest. Las Vegas down the road from you was 18th dirtiest. And then the cleanest city of dozens of cities they looked at was the same city that over a year ago, if your readers go get on Google and they look at 10 cleanest big cities, cleanest ones, I had said that Jacksonville, Florida, which has almost 1 million people, was probably the cleanest big city of its size in the United States. And Busy Bee came out with the exact answer for them, that they were the cleanest such big city also in the United States. So I thought, interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. Jacksonville, Florida. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the 2016 election, of course, was... change.
You know, it's funny. I had put this, the 10 biggest, dirtiest states list just out before Earth Day, a few days prior, and I was thinking it would go viral, but the story that really went viral was back on September 15th. And I'm a political person. I don't really talk about it to everybody, but my training is more in that arena originally and then in government. And I certainly did I worked in political campaigns. I've certainly helped manage one. I used to collect data. I did polling nationwide. I remember doing polls we called other countries. We had some clients here in the district and in New York State and in California. And so it was a skill that I acquired. And I had noticed during the campaigns, let's remember that both parties, one party didn't really approve of Trump being the nominee, and the other party didn't really approve of Hillary being their nominee. But that's what happened.
Yes.
And during the before and then during the campaigns right up to the November election, it had already been known that both Hillary and Donald were residents of New York City. She represented New York State in the Senate. He's a native New Yorker, and all his actions are there. They'd ask them, what are you going to do about New York City's pollution problems? Because it was well documented by the media. What are you going to do to clean up other big cities and states? And basically, they did not answer reporters' questions. They chose not to pursue these things that the reporters were asking. And yet, at the same time, during the election and then after the election, Gallup have taken political polls of voters and citizens alike. The citizens overwhelmingly, each time 60 to 70% margins, they were concerned that governments, state and local, were not doing enough to clean up and protect the environment, and that maybe a lot of people were willing to sacrifice their personal behaviors to have a cleaner environment. And yet, interestingly enough, also in this article, I need to say that the two VP picks, Mike Pence and Tim Kaine, they represented states that were also very dirty. Indiana was a top litter scorecard, worst state. Virginia was a below average and almost a worst scorecard state. And so these VP picks came from places where pollution, water, litter, air was certainly a problem. And you notice earlier in this conversation, I said that a lot of trash and litter is now heading straight to Virginia. It's avoiding other states along the way. Some will go to New Jersey, but a lot of it heads straight to Virginia, and then obviously to Georgia and then Alabama. Those are the destinations right now. I had mentioned about this Gallup poll to the readers.
Now, you sure was
so interesting.
You sure it was a Gallup poll? Because if it was New York, it should be the Pew poll.
Pew 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 pew.
Maybe it was a Pew poll.
I don't think that's funny.
Gallup had done. They were the lion's share of these polls, and that was the answers provided. 60 to 70% margin. And I put this in the story. So when it came on election day, just under 2 months, the voters choose to vote. They say one thing, and then they acted a different way.
The power of willful ignorance cannot be overstated.
And so since that time, I basically said, here's the voters. They are their own hypocrites, that they want a certain thing, and then they go out and support a politician that does just the reverse. And that's what I've been saying since the original story back on September 15th of 2016.
This is Savino Veritas from Burbank, California. We are not soundproof. We're not foolproof, but we are 90-proof. And sounds we're talking to Steve Spacek from the Washington, D.C. area, who's been enlightening us about toxicity and dirtiness and dirty states and dirty cities and busy bees and rats that steal pizza. And it's very, very interesting. It really, truly is. You testified. Did you talk about the testifying? Or
I was invited to a rules hearing on CO2. There was a proposal to, and keep in mind, Obama was still president then, but I wouldn't say, and I'll make this comment, I wouldn't say that he was the most aggressive environmentalist. I mean, he had some feelings, but he wasn't as strong as, let's say, a contender in the 2016 election, Bernie Sanders. But they were talking about rolling back some of these provisions and allowing more CO2 in certain county, on the county level in the United States. And so someone for an organization asked me to testify. And you don't just get to go. You have to be invited, and you're watched. This is a secure facility at their national headquarters. And so it was a 5-minute speech, and I would say the people listening in, they were the top policymakers. They probably agreed with what I was saying, but there was a mandate to roll back some of these levels in various counties in the United States. And so that's when I found out about counties in certain states and cities that had high ozone levels. Of course, California still has them, but I think compared to some other states, California has certainly managed. The management is out there, or at least Californians are aware and they are at least, I believe, actively doing something about it, whereas other states, they just don't care. They don't care about regulating these. The proposal to water down and increase the to water down the regulations and increase the CO2 did not occur. So they continued the current regulations until this past year. Last December, there was a proposed rule hearing to roll back and increase the use of gliders, which are bus and trucks that can roll upon a public roadway. And basically, they are vehicles where the engine is removed, and a newer and replaced with another engine that could actually pollute more than the previous engine in it. These vehicles are banned in the state of California and some other states, but primarily in the Southeast, Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina, and Alabama. Driving these vehicles are legal. Those are states that have lax air pollution standards compared to most of the U.S. And so there is, again, making these gliders more accessible. And there was a big fight to try to bring gliders into California. And as we speak, there has been no decision made on whether to increase gliders or increase these transportation vehicle admissions. But so we will see. But I basically said no to increasing their presence, and I certainly said no to increasing their admissions.
Well, I personally want to thank you for that. And anybody who cares about the environment, I think, would agree with me. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I never heard of gliders, so once again, thank you for enlightening me and the listeners on this item. I'm assuming that these vehicles have greater fuel efficiencies. Is that why they're...
Actually, they kind of burn more. I wouldn't say they're having greater fuel. Some of these really burn a lot more, kind of like the old unleaded gas before you started putting in additives to it. They burn more. They pollute more. They're already burning and polluting more. So basically, Pruitt's people would allow more burning, more emissions, more toxics out in the air. And we don't know how he's going to go, but I'm hoping... I'm a big prayer person, but I'm praying and hoping that whatever's already, it doesn't get any worse, and I don't think it should get any worse. And again, there's a fight. They're fighting the state of California against its rights to have cleaner air and cleaner vehicles. They're fighting their desire. And again, there's some states like Texas and New York State, and I guess you could add in the southeastern states with these gliders, where they're all fighting the state of California over that.
But just to clarify, Steve, these gliders, what's the advantages? Why do they want to use these gliders?
Well, it's kind of like, I guess, the same reason why people in the commercial world want to pollute more. It's a profit thing. They're going to make more profits. It benefits a few companies. They can make enormous profits while affecting the health and well-being of the people that aren't using these, which are the greater number of people and animals and plants. I mean, it's a pure profit. This whole thing, the rollback of increasing pollution and rolling back standards, it's to make profits without morality, without conscience.
Old habits die hard.
Yes, but I still don't understand how, you know, why would a trucking company want to have gliders instead of fuel?
I think it just reduces their operating cost. They want to, and by having gliders, it's cheaper to operate a vehicle. It's a cost-cutting move. That's what it appears to be. Again, I am no glider genius, but I did some research, and that's... there's only a handful of companies that are actually maintaining vehicles with these glider engines, and they all tend to be in the southeastern United States, and those are the same places where gliders predominate, and whereas California won't allow gliders in their state, they won't allow the manufacturer sale of gliders, and it's a profit thing. It's obviously a disdain for environmental protection and maintenance. I mean, but yes, it's pure profit.
So I'm assuming that they could run on cheaper fuel. Maybe that's what that's all about.
Some of that cheaper fuel has more toxins, and it can be refined differently. Like I said, some states like California, the fuel has to be refined more intensely, and you add additives. There are states where they have old-fashioned fuel where it's almost raw fuel, a lot of toxins in it, a lot of pollutants, and it's actually cheaper, not just to refine, but to put out. It's less regulated, and these commercial operations, that's what they want. They want to cut their costs and make more profit.
I see. And yes, on that note, here in California, when I talk to people back east, even those who are not totally, in my opinion, totally, even those who did not drink the Kool-Aid, who are still somewhat reasonable people, they can't believe that we here in California vote. We ourselves vote in these extra gasoline taxes to refine these fuels so that the air is cleaner. That's kind of amazing to them. They can't.
You're still the leading state for that, because the other 49 states they're just not as stringent or has these taxes. They figure that these regulations and taxes affects profit, and some of these states are even saying, or their politicals especially, right, they think it borders on communism or socialism to have all these regulations and to affect profit. But they just don't have a conscience. They don't really care about people. They say they do. It might create a job, but the job harms people. It creates conditions where it hurts people more than helps them. Yeah, there's money in a person's pocket, but they will die sooner. But they're going to be unable to use the money in their pocket because it will lead them to an early death.
I'm glad you brought up that topic, Steve, because I may be naive.
You know how naive you sound.
Maybe my fellow Californians are naive, but we kind of believe what Al Gore thinks, and that is that actually cleaning up the environment will create many, many more jobs. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm thinking of the oil industry and what we call the extractives, the natural gas, the coal industries. They disagree in that they want to have existing processes, and what we're saying is nothing about air or water or wind, which are more newer alternative energies. They believe in using existing fossil fuels. Again, it's about profit. They don't want to convert their facilities to new technologies. They make an argument, well, it's going to be too expensive. They're set. They're just hell-bent on keeping these. They have this mindset. They're hell-bent. They trust these old fossil fuels, that it was good for America for hundreds of years. It can still be good. And the heck with the dead people, the heck with those that support communism and regulations. You know, this is good for America. It's kind of like the old saying, what's good for GM is good for America. And what GM did wasn't always beneficial to Americans sometimes. And that would be another conversation in itself.
Yes. And I see what you're saying, and about the existing, the oil companies, of course. Even though, from my perspective, I think they're missing the boat. I think they should be investing and looking into alternatives. But I can understand why they don't, because they've forever made a fortune from fossil fuels. But then new companies could grow and start that are alternative energy sources. But the powers that be kind of obstruct these things from happening. Just a quick illustration of that on a citizen level. Here in California, they used to have the... Yeah. We were able to have solar panels. And initially, if you created enough electricity, you could actually sell it to the utility companies. But the government has stepped in and said, no, you can't do that. So they've taken away that advantage, and of course they've taken away that incentive.
You know, we talk about the NRA and their power with the Second Amendment. Well, next to the NRA and the American Association of Retired Persons, probably the biggest lobbying group in the United States and on Capitol Hill is the fossil fuel industry. All their operations in the U.S. tend to be in these red states. Their supporters, their administrators, they tend to be politically conservative Republican, and they tend to have global operations, and they tend to... They do very well in China and even in the Middle East and Iran and certain countries where we have, it goes back to what I was saying, there's no morality amongst these companies. They'll do extractions with countries that hate the United States. And yet they play the game. They'll deal with terrorists and countries that hate democracy.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
In the sake of getting, the stuff out of the ground, or natural gas, coal, and to make profits that will benefit democracies and non-democracies alike. But these are dirty, destructive fuels and types of energies. And at the end of the day, these global companies make a profit, and they keep their political power. But basically, they're in with a lot of evil people around the world, too.
There is no America. There is no democracy. There is only IBM and ITT and AT&T and DuPont, Dow, Union Carbide, and Exxon. Those are the nations of the world today.
Well, on that note, I mean, even though most of America, including myself, did not like the way he was removed as Secretary of State, we have a person like Rex Tillerson, who was pretty buddy-buddy with Putin. Mm-hmm. In fact, won the Russian Friendship Medal. And he clearly has interest in Russia, oil interests. And I see what you're saying for sure. Now,
I will say this about Rex Tillerson. I was opposed to him being in. I kind of knew a little about, just like Scott Pruitt. They're both from Oklahoma. They had their mindset was oil and gas from day one. Even though Texas is a red state, I see more of that mindset in Oklahoma. They have much more of it there. It's a smaller state, and there's a lot more extractions of this than even Texas, because there are big areas of Texas that don't have oil or gas production. And whereas Oklahoma, the whole state is pretty much like that. But I was pleasantly surprised that he was politer and a little more amenable to maybe considering alternative energy. And then I kind of enjoyed the idea that he said certain things about Trump that maybe Trump needed to hear.
You imbecile! You bloated idiot!
Trump didn't like it. And then the day before he was fired, as typical of a Trump nominee, he said, or appointee, he would say, oh, I have confidence. I have confidence. That person is a good guy. Rex is a good guy. And then the next morning's news, they're out of the building.
Yes. That seems to be par for the course for almost everybody. I'm just waiting and hoping that Scott Pruitt finds his pink slip soon.
I'm hoping and praying that the exit door is shown to him. But I think I just heard that Trump still has a lot of confidence. And you know, when they had this hearing with Mr. Pruitt last week, one thing that really disturbed me, I know something about these red state politicals, because they're kind of in on the action to keep him in. And some of these were Democrats. And so they'll say, oh, I'm blue, I'm a liberal, at election time. And then when it comes to responding to lobbyists. They're taking a lot of cash from these fossil fuel industries, the NRA, just like a conservative Republican. So it's things like this, and being in this town long enough, it's maybe very apolitical or apartisan. So I really don't have strong feelings towards member politicals of either party. I just look at them as sources of power that you have to deal with. But I don't like some of their conscious moves. Or I'm wondering, what's wrong with them?
What is wrong with you?
Why are they acting like this? Where's their morality? Where's their sense of duty to the people? But I think their first, here comes my favorite line. These people are private servants. They're not public servants. So I would say 364 days of the year, they want to be private servants, and there'll be one day, the day of the campaign or election, they will be your servant. They want to kiss the babies and get your campaign contributions. And then the rest of the year, I'm a private servant.
Yeah, I think that's good. I applaud you for being an apolitical person. And I think we need more of that in the United States if we're ever going to be able to cooperate again on a national level. And on that issue, national level, how about global level, like climate change? What do you think about climate change and Punxsutawney Phil's February prediction?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I think it's happening. But, you know, here's another thing. I know you've been roasting in Southern California and some of the Western states. There's not been enough rain. Or suddenly there's an outburst of a monsoon. And then in other parts of the United States, just in the last couple of weeks, there's been excessive snow, freezing temperatures. There's definitely climate change because the science says there is. There's been melting of the oceans. There's been increase and decreases in temperatures. There have been activities of the earth that have seen a change. And that's why, because of this change, it can be applied to the climate. It's affecting the climate. And we had discussed Scott Pruitt. I just want to interject. I guess we know about his desire to have a $43,000 private soundproof booth that was worth only $5,000. That was his spending limit, that he spent over $100,000 on first-class flights. He sat at in business, and he was dealing with politicals that wanted to curry favor with the EPA. And, you know, it's funny because I was listening. This is the humor part. You may be familiar with the NPR show, a guy named Ira Glass, This American Life.
Oh, yes.
Now, Scott Pruitt is approximately 50 years old, but his voice sounds like someone 20 or 30, about 30 years younger. And so when he speaks, it's like a grown man speaking like a child.
Yes. Okay.
I'm Scott Pruitt.
It's just the way he talks. It makes me laugh, but it sounded very childish. And yet, the Republicans accepted that childish behavior during the testimony, but he really ticked off a lot of Dems on the committee. They told him, you know, your answers weren't you, they were asked for him to answer yes or no. And at least one of them interjected, well, you're not adult enough to be on this committee or before our hearing. And I think his voice, his mannerisms are a little bit juvenile, but that's his choice. He has tremendous power. And here we go. These red states and Astract, they suck up to him. And they enjoy sucking up to him. So he provides a sucking and vice versa.
Yeah.
He's that kind of guy.
So, yes, if I don't know if you remember Perot.
Ross Perot.
Ross Perot, yeah. I was going to quote him, you know, because he said, when he was talking about NAFTA, and he says, you're going to hear a big sucking sound, and that'll be jobs. Yeah. Well, we're going to hear a big sucking sound. Scott Pruitt,
I hope. He had a certain...
What in the hell are you talking about?
He has more of what I call a North Texas accent. I grew up in South Texas. They're not as twangy. And I notice this when I travel across the South. If you live closer to a hilly or mountainous area, you have more of a twang to your accent. And that could be, include Tennessee and Kentucky and Virginia. When you're in a coastal area, like the Carolinas or Florida or Alabama, it's more of a southern, softer, not as twang accent. But when I remember during one of the debates, he kept saying, "Can I finish? Yeah, can I finish?" And then Saturday Night Live, and it may be still out on YouTube, did a routine about him, one of those comedians back then in 92. And I thought it was fantastic, and that has stayed in my mind all these years about, can I finish? May I finish?
Well, Steve, I want to thank you for joining us and talking about all this, giving us the dirt on the dirtiest places in the United States and talking about the environment, and sure, especially the comments on morality and integrity. I appreciate that, and I hope Civino Veritas listeners appreciate that. And now, just before you go, though, this list that you're coming out with, it's usually every 4 years, but now it's like this was a special edition?
Mm-hmm. It was special. In fact, I just got some emails. This past year, I've had some personal situations that kind of sidelined production. The other thing is I had some providers of data, and two of them, we've had a falling out relationship. And so I made a decision in the last 12 months that when I do have this list ready, it'll be my last one. And so from then on, and I'm kind of doing it now as we speak, I will be looking at crisis-to-crisis jurisdictions, those that have, they're making the news, and I will be rating and reporting more on those versus the U.S. as a whole, because there's some places that I had rated doing bad or even clean that made improvements or fell below, and they're making progress or going down. And I don't see a lot of, I don't want to put in too much energy. I'm putting it in at places where really this problem affects a greater amount of people and where there's going to be a lot of deaths. I mean, I'm going to have limited resources and time, and I'm going to focus more on that. So if anybody wants to follow along me or carry the baton on my work, that's fine. And then a final comment, if any of your listeners work in government, you need a contractor or someone that works in a nonprofit, and I'm available for hiring and for new clients.
And could you tell listeners again your website so maybe they could?
Absolutely. It's litterscorecard.com. I can be followed on Twitter at litterscorecard. There's a Facebook page, American State Litter Scorecard, all the words put together.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. It was, once again, and very enlightening. I appreciate it, and I hope you join us again.
And thank you for letting me finish.
Oh, you're welcome. You take care, Steve.
You're welcome. Thanks, everybody.
Meeting is adjourned. Oh, I am sorry, sir. I didn't mean to overstep my bounds. You say that.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
No, you say that, Governor.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
The end.
By George, he's got it. It is the end.
No, that'll be all. Just be sure to lock the door behind you on your way out. Good night.